Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
In association with Viatel Technology Group, IT leaders breathe easy with Viatel Managed Cybersecurity. Viatel.com.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we're going to look at the new tools launched by Meta to help protect against extortion and intimate image-based abuse. We're also going to look at running for novices. What do you need to know and how can you possibly make it through? As always, you can email the show if you want, techtalk@newstalk.com. Or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. But we're going to start this week with those new tools introduced by Meta. There are a few new protocols that they have put into place to try and make their platforms that bit safer. A quick reminder that Meta platforms include Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp. Alex Cooney is the chief executive of CyberSafe Kids and she joins me now. Alex, it's interesting to see these developments from Meta's side. Can you just give us an overview of some of the new tools?
Yeah, so they are introducing new features essentially to address child sexual abuse imagery online and child nudity online. So they're giving users greater choice by, you know, giving them the opportunity to say, no, I don't want to see this image, and blurring out image. They're essentially using AI to detect such imagery and try and block it from the user's view, which I think is really important in the context of the growth in this kind of material online.
And like, this feels, on one hand, it's great, but then on the other hand, it feels like it's been a long time coming. From what we've seen of this, are these initiatives, how will they work and how easy will it be for content to be reported, flagged and ideally taken down?
This is the age old question in terms of any kind of harmful or inappropriate content. You know, how responsive are they to user flagging, user complaints? We hear such mixed reports on this. So we do need to see this improve. I mean, this is in the context, the introduction of these new tools is in the context of a massive increase of child sexual abuse material over the last few years. The Global Threat Assessment Report, which is produced by the We Protect Global Alliance, quoted an 87% increase in this type of content since 2019. So we're really looking at massive growth and not enough action being done. So yes, these moves are really important, but we need to see that we need to see much quicker responsiveness really from the different companies that provide these services that children are using. But we also need to ensure that they're effective, that the companies are responsive, and that we have real action and a clampdown on this kind of illegal, harmful material.
Yeah, and I think the word harmful is really important here because, like, if you are the person at the center of the image, that being online for 1 minute is 1 minute too long. And so if it takes a bit of time, like be that an hour or a day to come down, it can have huge damage psychologically as well as reputationally and all the other elements as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is the real challenge here, is that the responding quickly, the timeliness, you know, to my mind, that is part of the overall effectiveness of the response time is how quickly that things are responded to, taken down, especially content of this nature, because certainly child sex abuse survivors who have experienced this online talk about, you know, that ongoing, you know, the harm, that ongoing impact. You know, they could be walking down the street and wondering, you know, who has seen this stuff online, because it can be seen over and over again. It can be shared across platform. It can be very difficult to entirely remove it, as we all know, if not impossible to entirely remove it. Yeah, the harm is ongoing. The impact is extreme. It's the most grievous breach of privacy that we can imagine. And of course, it's happening to a child, so even worse.
The use of artificial intelligence and the arrival of things like the Digital Services Act, it does feel like, you know, there's extra armor coming to protect particularly our young people online. But I've said it a few times already now, but it does come back to the speed. Like, could artificial intelligence remove all content of this nature from platforms on which there are young members? Or does that spark the whole, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of expression debate?
Well, and into that debate, you have to add end-to-end encrypted services like WhatsApp and now Messenger, you know, where it's a lot harder to detect this kind of imagery and remove it. And, you know, something like WhatsApp's hugely popular with young children. So our report last year for 8 to 12 year-olds, 39% of them had a WhatsApp account. And, you know, we know they often use it in a kind of group format and they share a lot of content in it. So it could be, and also, you know, they could be meeting somebody on a kind of a social media site, and then the conversation gets moved to a more private communications type platform. And then all sorts of stuff is being shared and very easily hidden as well, if parents are checking. So it is really concerning. I mean, of course, what I really welcome here is that Meta is using AI to address the problem. You know, AI is certainly exacerbating the problem because we know now there are apps and tools that you can use to remove clothing from photographs. So it's really exacerbating the problem. Artificially generated child sexual abuse material. You know, you don't need to actually exploit a child to exploit a child. You know, you don't need to have them send you stuff. You can, you know, sweep it from their social media accounts and then exploit. So the potential for harm is enormous. So we need to get really, really effective in the tools that we're using to try detect, to remove, to clamp down, and AI has to be part of that solution.
Yeah, because what I've noticed, and obviously I'm not a child, but I use Instagram an awful lot, and a lot of the spam DMs or comments or likes on my story would come from explicit accounts, if you want to call them that. Like, so from even the name of the pages, the profile pictures. If you go into your message requests on Instagram, you might see some stuff that you probably don't want to see at, you know, 8 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. So this does seem to be a wider issue for the platform beyond the harm and the targeting of children. And I'm still baffled at the fact that it's occurring and it's frequent enough that I can refer to multiple instances from the last, say, 10 days.
Yeah, it is. It's an enormous problem, and you know, categorizing it, you know, into whether it's breaching a particular service's terms and conditions or you know, codes of conduct, because some of it may be legitimate, some of it, you know, some stuff may get picked up that is perfectly legitimate, somebody on a beach in a swimsuit, but you know, then there is the stuff where it is, you know, pornographic content essentially. And some platforms do allow that sort of content, others don't. So, but there is no question that it is widespread and, yeah, very problematic for the companies behind these services, but they need to do a lot more to clamp down on it. You know, it's just one of the challenges with all the kind of benefits and profits that they make, you know, from the services, they're going to have to invest far more to really get to the bottom of the matter, and particularly where as regards their child users.
Every time you're on, we try to be practical in our conversation. So we don't just list out all the issues because anyone can do that. It's about taking action. So this is what the platforms are doing. When it comes to parents, because this is not something that I think every child would feel comfortable going to their parent or guardian with, saying, you know, this image of me has appeared online, or this AI doctored image of me has appeared online. How do parents engage their kids in that conversation and create the safe space so that the child does, whether it's going to them or another adult that they trust, to flag that this issue has arisen?
Yeah, and I think that is such an important one. It could be, you know, whichever trusted adult that child has, what we need to ensure is that they have a trusted adult that they can go to, that we are normalizing conversations around what can happen online. Obviously, not just the scary stuff, but the positive stuff. It's a normalized conversation. We're talking about, you know, things that can happen online, things you need to look out for, and very hard for parents to do, but ideally not to panic if something like this does come up, you know, that they feel that they have the tools and resources to address it, whether it's, okay, right, we're going to block that account, we're going to report that account, Potentially take it to the guards if it's of serious enough of nature, that they feel that they have steps and actions that they can take, and reassurance to the child, of course, that this will be okay, and we're going to take positive action to address it. I think these things are so important, and it could be if stuff is being shared in the context of a school group, because obviously that does happen as well. Taking it to the school so that you're engaging them in the conversation, and hopefully they are also then addressing it in the classroom, because obviously any content involving a child, a sexual image of a child, is illegal, and we do need to address it. And children need to understand that even having it on their device is illegal, and certainly sharing it further. So, taking action as quickly as possible is really important, and it can be addressed and it can be removed the quick, as if the quicker the action taken.
Okay. The other issue, I suppose, is for the parents to feel comfortable and confident to know where to turn. Who's educating, or how can parents get up to speed to look out for issues, or to know who to turn? Like, is it automatically going to the guards? Is it going to the school? Because I still feel that issues like this fall between a few stools.
They do, and I think we get calls on this. What should we do in this situation? What is the best course of action? Sometimes there is different advice given by the guards. We had one case where a child was being exploited online over images he shared. He thought he was talking to a girl of his own age in a different county, and very quickly it turned into, well, we're going to share these images widely unless you give us money. And the parents did the right thing. They went to the guards, but they were told to block the accounts. No further action was taken. So it is really difficult. That no information was taken on that account. And actually, what they need to do is also report that account through the service, so that they are aware that, this is going on. And of course, for them, it's also difficult because it could be whack-a-mole. People behind these accounts tend to have multiple accounts, multiple identities online. They're actively scamming lots of different people at the same time, including children. It is a difficult problem to get on top of, but equally, there are things you can do. And as I said, the quicker the action taken. So we do need really consistent advice being given, consistent messaging, but blocking and reporting are really important actions to take. And removing any images as quickly as possible, with the platform. I think that there are absolutely great sources of information out there. We've got guides on our website, the digital Better Digital Parenting Guide, just as an overview for all things online relating to children, if that's helpful to parents. There's loads of great, webwise.ie, Common Sense Media, that there are really good websites that parents can refer to. Checking in with the child regularly, keeping an eye on the device when they're younger. Unfortunately, there are ways and means for children to hide stuff. So again, those conversations, coming back to the conversations about what we're sharing online, the consequences of what we're sharing online. With younger children, we'll often talk about the granny rule. If you wouldn't share it, or if you wouldn't show it to your granny, then don't post it online. If you wouldn't say it or show it to your granny, then don't post it online. Just trying to help them understand the kind of ramifications of sharing something that may be borderline or indeed inappropriate or illegal.
Another point that I've been thinking about quite recently is we often talk about things about, if your child is targeted, but is enough being done to educate kids who may be doing the targeting? So, talking to them about the consequences of their actions and the damage that they could do, because we've heard countless tragic cases in this country, and I'm sure there are many more that we've never heard about. But that digital education, and again, technology is one of my favorite things, and it's great to see the education that's going on around coding and all that kind of jazz. But are we doing enough to reinforce to children who may be using cyberbullying as a tool, the long-term serious damage that they could do?
No, I don't think we are doing enough overall. And I think it does come down to the fact that, the way that we communicate online, we lose a lot in that online communication. We gain a lot, but we also lose a lot. So things like eye contact, being able to read someone's tone, their facial expression, their gestures. So something that may have started out as a joke could easily snowball into something else, like a comment in a public way to another child, that was maybe intended as a joke. Others then jump in, And suddenly this child is feeling, bombarded, and you can't see their reaction. So it can escalate. We've seen these cases where one child said something to another kid online, others then jumped in and started saying, all sorts of negative things, and not having no sense of what the child at the center of it all, who was on the receiving end, was actually feeling or going through. So, and I, as I said, these things can escalate so quickly. So I think we do need to do a lot more about educating children to communicate with respect, with empathy, with kindness, understanding the limitations sometimes in a way that the communications that, again, you can't see the reaction of the other person. So you may have to be a bit more careful about how you phrase something, or just, don't say it at all. If you're not sure, then better not to say it. And it is really challenging, and we do need to ensure there are plenty of reminders to kids about how they're communicating online, and checking in with parents. As again, if parents, especially when they're younger, picking up the device, they can maybe pick up something, the tone of a conversation where, potentially there's a bit of meanness, in it, that you can then address that with the child, because, it can happen quickly. I mean, the other kind of main form of online bullying that we see is children being left out. And there's so much scope for that online, and so many ways to see that you're being left out. If you take something like the Snap Maps feature on Snapchat, you can actually see where your friends are, and feel very excluded that way. Or we had another case of a WhatsApp group which excluded one child and but had her name in the group, sort of saying, "We hate, so and so." So, there are lots of ways to bully children, and online, or to hurt children or humiliate them. So we must definitely reinforce the need for kind of respectful, kind online communication as much as possible at home, but also in school, in our conversations in schools.
Yeah, and I think it goes back because one of my, I think it's great to see the schools, the parents coming together to take action around phones in schools, but I've never encountered a school that says phones are welcome. And so I wonder if that's putting attention and effort into something that's not necessarily the problem. If it comes back to those conversations around respect, integrity, moral, ethic quandaries, and all the rest. And that's something that has to happen regardless of whether your kid is in primary school, secondary school. It's the fact that they're a human being. These are life skills that they need to have.
Oh, absolutely. And the school's role can be so important. I've seen good and bad examples, where the school was right on it. The parent raised an issue about some online bullying. It was a group chat, and there was some really nasty stuff being said, some sort of sexually aggressive stuff. And this was 12 and 13-year-olds, really, and people being told to kill themselves, really quite nasty stuff. And the school was right on it, straight out letter out to parents. This is not the type of behavior we expect to see. They kind of brought in the parents of the children who were saying this stuff all behind, so they were very quick to respond and to communicate that this was not acceptable behavior in their school environment, which I think is so important. Because of course, a lot of this stuff isn't happening during school time on school devices. So, some schools will say to us, it shouldn't be our problem. It should be the parents' problem. This is happening when they go home. This is happening at night in their bedrooms, which is why I think that the kind of smartphone ban type discussion is too narrow. It's not, in reality, an 8 to 10-year-old is much more likely to have their own games console or tablet. And if they're on their own in the bedroom with the door shut on that device, the parent really has no idea what they're doing, who they're talking to, what they're saying, what they're looking at. So I think we need to think much more broadly about this, both at home and in school. What are the conversations we're having at home? What are the boundaries we've put in place around you? So keeping them out of bedrooms, especially overnight, would be a really key one, actually, in trying to protect your child online, especially again going to that younger age group. I know it gets a lot harder as they get into their older teens. But again, in schools, having these conversations, reminders around how we communicate online, what we, what is true and accurate information online, how can we fact check, source check, how do we, what do we do if we see something that makes us feel uncomfortable online? Constant conversations, constant reminders are so important, these things, both for the people who are experiencing negative things online and those who might be behind some of that behavior online. The really important that we're having those conversations.
Alex Cooney of CyberSafe Kids. As always, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, just a quick reminder of some of the websites that Alex mentioned there. Obviously, there is cybersafekids.ie. That is Alex's organization that has a whole host of information for parents to guide through some of the conversations, to introduce you to how some of these platforms work and where you can turn if you need help or advice. They also run courses which are really beneficial, particularly if your child is on the cusp of getting a smart device of their own. As Alex correctly mentioned just now, it's not just about smartphones. It's about tablets, it's about games consoles, it's any device that's connected to the internet. You just need to be aware of how to navigate that as a parent or as a guardian or as a carer. Another brilliant resource that Alex mentioned is webwise.ie. Webwise is fantastic because it has portals for parents, for children and for teachers as well. So if you're looking to try and navigate all of this from scratch or put some form of protocol or process in place, webwise.ie is excellent. There's also a resource hub on ispcc.ie. Really helpful videos there. There's also great guides to each of the platforms. I say this quite a bit, but if you are a parent or a guardian, I think one of the best things you can do is get familiar with each of the platforms or each of the apps or each of the devices that your child is using. It's just really beneficial to get familiar with the reporting processes so that the first time you're encountering it isn't when there's a stressy situation. Like I know myself, when you're up to 90 and under pressure, you don't think straight. And that's when you can make mistakes or you can miss something that seems obvious. So just download the apps that your kids are using. Get familiar with them. You don't have to use them every day, but just know how to do the basics, the screenshots, the blocking, the reporting, and staying on top of reports as well. It's not enough just to hit report and hope for the best. In my experience anyway, you have to stay on top of the platforms. The Digital Services Act has put provisions in place that mean that the platforms now need to take action. And if action isn't being taken, you can then get on to Commission Naman, which is the regulator for broadcasters, but also for online platforms as well. So look, there's no denying this is a scary issue. I was having a chat with someone earlier in the week and I said, I don't envy parents or guardians or carers. As somebody who has multiple nieces and nephews, it's something that I'm thinking about and constantly worrying about. All we can do is try to get ahead of it where possible. And I do think it comes back to education for us, the adults, for teachers, for the kids themselves, both the bullies and those being bullied. We have a serious job of work to do, but I'm confident that we will get there. I have to believe that we'll get there. Otherwise, I think I might cry. But anyway, if you have any questions or if you need some advice or looking for more information, you can also drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com and I will do my best to help you in whatever way I can. But those websites, as I said, cybersafekids.ie, webwise.ie and ispcc.ie are all excellent starting points for you. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, Kathleen McNamee is going to join me to talk about our undertaking of the VHI Women's Mini Marathon. Stay tuned.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As ever, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can do so by dropping me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. And last week on the show, I mentioned that myself and Kathleen McNamee from Off the Ball, I don't know how, why, when or what, but we signed up to do the mini marathon in aid of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, which does incredible work supporting those impacted by sexual abuse and trauma. They've been doing it since 1979, but they need funding and funds to continue that work. So we are going to hit the streets of Dublin on the June bank holiday weekend. And Kathleen is with me now to talk about taking on this endeavour. Kathleen, how are you?
I'm all right. Legs are a bit sore after the last few weeks of training. You say you don't know how we ended up in this situation. I know exactly how I ended up in this situation because anyone who listens to Jess on the radio will know she's an incredibly convincing person. And she makes things sound so brilliant, which most of the time they are. But then all of a sudden you find yourself training and trying to run when you have never been a runner in your life before.
I don't think I had to twist your arm that much.
No, I think the cause was probably the thing that won me round to it.
Yeah.
And I did say at the start of the year, on Off the Ball, the lads were all talking about their New Year's sporting resolutions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people were saying they wanted to hit 10K running. Some people wanted to cycle more. I was like, I just want to get out and get some more fresh air. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking about it over the few weeks afterwards. And I was like, actually, I think I can do a little bit better than that. But I probably just needed the push from someone. And
here I am. But like the thing is, what I find is it's nice to have a goal to work towards. I'm like that in every aspect of my life. I would gladly sit around like a sloth all the time. But I love, obviously in our job, we have deadlines. Mm-hmm. I love a deadline. I love a project. And I feel like this is such an undertaking for both of us. But as you said, it is an amazing cause. And that makes it a bit easier.
That is the thing. On the days where I'm sitting at home and there's nothing I would rather do, if raining outside, it's windy, or I'm just mentally not in the space, I think of the money that we've already raised, which mm-hmm. is absolutely incredible. And we're still 2 months out, and what more we can raise and all the places it's going to go. And I think especially as women and women who are committing to run, which is a difficult pastime at times, depending on where you are and the time that you have allotted to you. You know, if it's the winter and you want to run at night, there's just so many different things that go into it. That's all that comes into my head. And the amount of people in my own life that since I've said I'm doing this have said to me, actually, I have used their services. I've used the services of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre that I didn't know that. And they're thanking me for doing it. So that's what runs through my head on those harder evenings to motivate myself to get out of the house.
Yeah, we'll talk about the training in just a second. But if you have, whether it's €2 or €20 to spare, please do consider donating it to the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. You can go to our link. It's idonate.ie/newstalkofftheball. And every single euro does make a difference. Because when we were talking about it, and the next day I was thinking, geez, this is an organisation that I wish it didn't exist.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? But it obviously
completely
exists because it's needed. And particularly in the wake of the Ashley Murphy trial last year, like that shook me to my core. And it's something that remains in my brain. And I just think that for any organisation supporting not only people who go through the violence themselves, but also their families and their network, you have to try and do whatever you can.
Definitely. And I think there's not one person in the world who hasn't been affected by it in some way, whether it's personally or knowing someone. I know I could be walking home of an evening with my boyfriend and it'll be dark and a couple of girls will run past me running by themselves. And my head immediately goes to, I wonder, does someone know that they're out, where they are? How long have they been out? How much longer of their run do they have? It could be 9, 10 o'clock at night. And I think it's so important that there are the services there that people can go to and that hopefully we can raise awareness of over the next couple of weeks and months and into the future as well, so that people know that they are supported and they're not alone. And I think that's the thing that's really struck me with people coming to me with these stories over the last, we've only been doing this, 2-3 weeks now we've committed mm-hmm. to it. The stories that people have come to me already, that's been the standout, is you're never alone. There's always a service. There's always a support. There's always people like us who take on harebrained ideas like running a marathon so that those services and supports will exist into the future.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to run for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, if you want to join us in our madness, you can do. Drop me a DM on Instagram at JessKellyNT, because I think we were having a chat this morning. As much as, and I've been running for a while and I really enjoy it, and there's days when I'm like devastated when I have to go home because I want to keep going. But this week I've struggled, just I'm exhausted, I'm moany, it's been grim some evenings. So I've struggled a little bit. I think we're both relying quite heavily on the adrenaline rush, the crowd and the buzz on the day.
Mm. I think people should really understand that like I have literally never run any sort of distance in my life. Jess at least has like training behind her. You said you did a 10K before. Mm-hmm. I am starting very much from scratch. So I'm really depending on this adrenaline and also the excitement of the day. And it's been great, the support I've had from friends who have said, you know, we'll help you out, we'll come running with you. Mm. if anyone sees me running around Phoenix Park, they're very likely to see me probably talking to myself, just trying to get myself through it.
Yeah.
But that's what you need. So the more support we can get, the better. I've gotten random messages of people who were listeners to Off the Ball or the different places that you've mentioned it. And they've just said, this is great. Well done. Mm-hmm. Keep going. All those little things add up in your head and make it seem a little bit easier.
Yeah. I'm confident it's going to be great. But again, the goal is to raise as much money as possible. We are going to do our bit. We are going to crawl if we have to, but we will get over the finish line. In terms of your training, what have you been doing? Have you just been going out and hoping for the best? Do you have a wearable? Are you using an app? What are you doing?
I looked up a kind of couch to 5K program and mm-hmm. started with that because I'm the sort of person, because I've never really run in that way before, I done football training and that style of running. I was worried about, you know, maybe one day I'd go out and I'd run a kilometer and I'd feel absolutely fine in a short amount of time. And then the next day I wouldn't be able to walk two steps. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to put some sort of structure on it to make sure I didn't injure myself. And also that I was doing it in a healthy way for my body, because if you've never exercised certain muscles, it's going to be very easy to harm yourself. Mm-hmm. So I've started off with that, and I'm hoping that as time goes on, I'll keep progressing through the stages and hopefully get to a stage where we can run the marathon and I will be okay.
It's all going to be fine. If you've any tips for us, and also, do you know what the other thing I think we should do is we should have a running playlist.
Definitely.
I have my own little one, but I think for people who are out there who are proper runners, what's the number one get up and go song on your playlist? Share it with me, techtalk@newstalk.com. I'm going to compile our little playlist and that'll get us through as well, right?
And we should definitely do some sort of piece at some stage of different bits that you can use if you are a beginner runner.
Absolutely.
Apps, wearables, whatever it is. Because at the moment, I'm just using like a random app on my phone that someone recommended to me and I downloaded it. I can't even remember the name of it now. It's run by Under Armour, I think.
Okay, yeah.
And using that and just the details that my phone are giving me, because I've never done it before. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, this'll be a start and we'll see how we go.
Well, what we'll do is in 3 weeks' time, maybe you'll come back and we'll talk about our progress. Mm-hmm. And we might get Carl Henry in as well to talk through the different wearables, the apps, and also the metrics that matter when you're running. Because that is something that's important to know as well.
Yeah, that's the other thing. When you're starting from scratch, it's really hard to know what you're supposed to measure. You know, people say distances. So how much time should it take you to run a kilometre or 5 kilometres if you've never done it before? If one day you're able to do it in a certain amount of time and the next day it takes you 10, 15 minutes longer, is that a terrible sign or is that just a recovery day where your body needs a little bit more space? So I know I'm definitely interested in learning a bit more about that and hopefully everyone else is too.
Yeah, if you've any thoughts, feelings or suggestions, again, the email address is techtalk@newstalk.com. But if you can, we would be so grateful if you could donate a few quid. Go to idonate.ie/newstalkofftheball. And thank you so much to everybody who has donated so far. We are both very ambitious, though, and we want to smash our target into tiny little pieces. And every euro matters. Kathleen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk Now. In a few minutes' time, John Fardy will be here with Screen Time. John, what's on the show this week?
Thank you, Jessica. Now, this week, much talk about the new Amy Winehouse biopic, Back to Black. And I talked to the lady who plays Amy Winehouse, Marissa Abeli, and also the director, Sam Taylor Johnson. We'll also be reviewing the week's new movie releases, as always, including a great new movie called The Teacher's Lounge. Plus, on the anniversary of the 100 years of his birth, or since his birth, we talk about the late, great and revolutionary actor that was Marlon Brando. Thank you, Jessica.
Great stuff. All of that is on the way in just a few minutes' time. But before we get to that, there are two things I want to do. Number one is tell you about a report that my colleague Barry White did. He spoke to an Irish woman named Áine O'Connor, who was the victim of stalking via an AirTag. Barry spoke exclusively to Áine, and here is just a snippet of her story.
I was living over in LA. I had been there for nearly 3 years at this point. And then one night in November 2022, I got a notification on my Apple smartphone to say that the owner of an AirTag has your location. So this is just like a random notification that comes up on your phone to let you know that like an Apple AirTag is like within your vicinity. So I just thought it was so innocent at first. I assumed maybe I took one of the girls' like wallets or makeup bags or had something on me that was belonging to someone else that had an Apple AirTag, because a lot of people in America use them. So I just assumed maybe I had someone else's property. And then I went looking for it in my bag, couldn't find it. I went out to my car, still couldn't find it. But then anyone who has an Apple phone will know that you can play a sound on a device. So I kind of was able to see, basically I could see on the AirTag whatever the stalker could see, I could see also on my phone. It was replicating on my phone. So I pressed play sound, and it just, the sound started beeping from my car. But as I was in my car, it was kind of muffled. So when I stood outside my car, it was louder, and I noticed that it was coming from underneath my car. And it was kind of at that moment that I realized, oh my God, someone's trying to like murder me. Someone's going to come here and like try kill me or something. So I panicked. I contacted Apple. Their customer service just was not helpful whatsoever. They were like, oh, well, sorry, like we can't disable it. And I was trying to explain, this was over text. So that's another thing. Like they couldn't even, they only deal with people over text message. So I was texting and I was saying, this isn't my AirTag. Like, I'm telling you now that this is not my Apple AirTag. Please disable it. And they were like, oh, we can't. Like, we don't have the security features to do that. So I was obviously getting very upset, very irate and very nervous. They told me then to just ring the police. So they just basically like shunned me off to call the police. Rang the police. They said they'd have someone around the next morning. The police came the next morning. I hadn't slept. I was so like, I was just up all night. I was terrified. I was worried. So the next morning the police came and they were able to hear the sound and they wrote a report. And even the police, they obviously have had experience with this. Like, and he said, he was like, get that device out of your car. That's nothing. That's sinister. Like, that's nothing good. Is like, that's put there for something sinister. And I think when the policeman kind of validated me, that's when I got really, really afraid.
Yeah, that is Irishwoman Áine O'Connor speaking about the stalking she was subject to as a result of an AirTag. You can listen to that interview in full if you go to the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, search for The Pat Kenny Show and you'll find the full report. But I was on with Sean Moncrief on Wednesday and we were talking through this type of technology, the trackers. They are incredibly useful when it comes to finding your keys, your backpack, whatever it might be. But there is that sinister side to them. And I would love to know what you think. Do you think that there is more that companies could do to put parameters in place when it comes to safety? Or should they just be scrapped? Should we get rid of these little, very easy to conceal trackers that can obviously be misused and abused? You can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. And speaking of that email address, a lot of you have been getting in touch with your tech questions. So we're going to just zip through as many as we can. Let me scan through here now. You'd think that I'd print them out or, you know, have them ready to go, but I don't. Okay, so first one is from Angela Gallagher. She says, hi, Jess. My query is a bit convoluted, I think. On April 9th, which was a Tuesday, you were on with the Pat Kenny Show and you mentioned a good projector. Someone was asking about one that operated well in a bright room. You said that you need darkness and went on to recommend a good one. I got the tail end of the slot, but missed the name. Could you please tell me the one you recommended? Yes, absolutely, Angela. It's the Philips Neopix Easy. I really like this projector for a few different reasons. Number one, it's quite affordable. Number two, it's very easy to set up and it allows you and enables you to use different inputs. So you could hook it up to your laptop. You can pair via Bluetooth. You can also put a memory card in as well. So you have many, 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 many options when it comes to getting your content. And I am very impressed by it. My nieces and nephews use it. They do like their little movie nights on the weekends. And yeah, you do need a dark room just the way the projector technology works. So if you have curtains, shutters, blinds, even a bed sheet you can chuck over a window, you will get a wonderful viewing experience. And it's not overly expensive, as I mentioned. So it's a nice, fun thing to have. Next, we have Noelle. And Noelle's email says, hi, Jess. I'm a faithful listener to your radio slots whenever possible. And I feel bad for asking you repeat suggestions you've already given. Don't feel bad. That's why I'm here. I have a hopeless memory for retaining this information for when I need it. But anyway, here it goes. Right. My faithful Huawei P Smart mobile phone is nearing the end of its long life and I need to replace it very soon. Can you help me? I'm not very tech savvy and only need the phone for the usual keeping in contact with the kids who live abroad, Google searches, decent photos, email, social media, etc. I've been keeping an eye on deals around the 200 euro mark, especially Samsung phones. I would like to have 5G because it works better for traveling, etc. I tend to hang on to my phone for 5 years or more if possible. Looking for reasonable battery life, decent camera, easy to use, etc. If you had any suggestions, that would help me. I would be very grateful. Yeah, there are plenty of good options in and around that price bracket, Noelle, which is obviously great news. Nokia have great ones, but you specifically mentioned Samsung here. So I would look at the Samsung A25. It's quite similar to the Huawei P Smart in terms of size. The camera on it is great. The battery is great. It'll do everything that you need it to do and probably a bit more as well. And it is in and around that price bracket. So hopefully that will do the job for you. I hope that helps. And the final one for today is from Kevin Byrne. Kevin says, "Hi, Jess. I hope your week is going well. Thank you so much. I'm inquiring about the name of a podcast you mentioned on News Talk this week. The podcast discusses advances and dangers of AI. You were speaking as the guest on another afternoon show." Yes, I was on Lunchtime Live with Mairead Ronan, who was filling in for Andrea. And the podcast is called Black Box. It is one of the best podcasts I've heard in a long time. And as I was saying to Mairead the other day, I think it should be compulsory listening because it explains the origins of AI and also gives very real world, tangible, understandable examples of how this technology could be misused or abused, as well as being utilized to its full potential. It's produced by The Guardian. It is utterly fascinating. Here's just a snippet of it to get an idea of what it's all about.
All over the world, strange things are happening. Humanity has collided with artificial intelligence. We're the last generation who's going to remember life before machines could learn, before everything changed. A technology that's become so powerful and so complex that even its creators have no idea what it's thinking. They just know what goes in and what comes out. Inside, it's a black box. And I've heard warnings that one day soon, it might slip out of our control.
Yeah, that is Black Box, produced by The Guardian. And it's looking at the origins and the potential dangers and opportunities, I want to say, when it comes to artificial intelligence. It's an excellent podcast, 6 episodes. They're around 30 minutes each. It is definitely worth your time. But that is it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. A quick reminder, if you don't mind, and if you have a few quid to spare, you can sponsor myself and Kathleen McNamee as we undertake the VHI Women's Mini Marathon in aid of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. It's taking place on the June Bank Holiday weekend. We are both terrified, but we are doing it for this excellent cause. So if you would like to support us, it would be amazing. You can donate right now by going to idonate.ie/newstalkofftheball. I am going to be in America next week. I will take you along with me as I go. The whole show will come from Austin and Boston next week. And I will be chatting with Kieran Cudahy every day from 4 p.m. starting next Tuesday. If you have any tech questions in the meantime, drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. But until then, have a great weekend.